that's going to end our discussion here with Jack, and we're going to go with something completely different, which is a discussion with Jim Holmes about China and Taiwan. Jim is the J.C. Wiley Chair of Maritime Strategy at the Naval War College. He has written extensively on South China Sea and U.S. naval strategy. So, Jim, why don't you kick off your discussion about China and Taiwan?
Hi, Larry. Great to talk to you again. We did this about this time last year. First of all, let me start by noting that nothing is inevitable in world affairs, and nor is a Chinese attack on Taiwan. In fact, never say never, never say always is a golden rule for living. But I do think a Chinese attack on Taiwan is more likely than the common wisdom on Asia-Pacific affairs allows. It's a good deal less far-fetched than the assassination of an archduke in Sarajevo plunging Europe into the cauldron of World War in 1914, or for that matter, a 19 hijacker setting loose 20 years of global war on terror on 9/11. And yet, those events happened. So could a cross-strait Chinese offensive. So it's up to Taiwan and its friends, including ourselves, to shape the likelihood of an attack and deter Beijing. Now, geopolitical and geoeconomic interests are a big part of the reason why China might strike. As they gaze eastward from the mainland, Chinese communist leaders and ordinary Chinese alike behold the first island chain, which runs from Japan southward through Taiwan through the Philippine and Indonesian archipelagos in around to Singapore. They understand that the island chain encloses China's entire coastline, that its occupants are allies or friends of the United States, and that some of them, like Japan, are well-armed. In their eyes, this merger of geography, alliances, and armaments raises a barrier to Chinese military and commercial access to the Western Pacific and the wider world. They find China's surroundings stifling. And they're not wrong to interpret their surroundings this way. Should hostile armed forces close the straits whereby Chinese naval and mercantile fleets access the Pacific high seas, General Secretary Xi Jinping's Chinese dream, his program for national rejuvenation, would be in grave peril. This is why Chinese strategists commonly refer to the first island chain as a metal chain, a barricade blocking China's destiny on the high seas. Breaking this chain is imperative, and Taiwan is the best place to cause a fracture. Wresting the island from its inhabitants would bring a wealth of strategic opportunities for China. It would place the People's Liberation Army, or PLA, at the island chain's midpoint, granting shipping and aircraft ready access to the Pacific. It would let the PLA overshadow the Luzon Strait, the best channel for submarines to pass between the South China Sea and the Pacific undetected. It would let China turn Japan's southern flank, applying pressure on this perennial rival, and on and on. National interests constitute a compelling reason for Beijing to rank Taiwan atop its list of priorities, as indeed they do. And China's leadership may be in a hurry to make good on this project. Last March, Admiral Phil Davidson, the outgoing commander of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command in Honolulu, made headlines by forecasting that China may strike within the next 6 years. Admiral Davidson was oblique about his reasoning. Why 6 years and why not 5 or 10? But nonetheless, the Davidson window for the timing of a Chinese assault has become a fixture in debates among China watchers. While Xi Jinping divulges little about timing, he makes no secret of his goals. He has vowed publicly, vehemently, and often to regain every inch of ground once ruled by Imperial China until the fall of the Qing Dynasty in 1911. He has connected this effort to China's dream and made himself accountable to the Chinese people for making their dream come true. Yet making well-defined promises is a dangerous thing for autocrats like Xi. It lets them portray themselves as strong and resolute and possessed of a grand vision. The danger is that if they fail to deliver on their promises, they will cast themselves as weak and irresolute in the eyes of the people. The Chinese people would not take kindly to having their passion for making China great again ignited and then doused. Chinese communist rule might even fall if they blame Xi for failing to deliver Taiwan after promising to. In other words, Xi, whether deliberately or not, has deployed a version of what the Harvard economist Thomas Schelling called the commitment tactic in negotiations, and not especially wisely. Sometimes a negotiator, say a union leader, will publicly state a non-negotiable position at the outset of talks. Think about what that does. It connects the negotiator's personal prestige to obtaining his or her demands. No one can climb down from such a promise for fear of losing face. By staking his good name on bringing home the goods in full, the negotiator deliberately forfeits the freedom to compromise, and in so doing amplifies his bargaining power. But his constituents will be incensed if he does give way, and he will pay a price. Similarly, Xi Jinping has given up the option of compromising on Taiwan. He may have built up his bargaining power with Taiwan and its protectors, but he has painted himself into a corner with his constituents. And again, I would say this is an unforced error. Now he must stand and deliver. But think about it. Xi is 68. Like all of us, he is on the clock. His patience with Taiwan has limits for that basic human reason, if nothing else. But does this interplay among interests, ideas about destiny, and leadership spell war? It's often noted that Chinese statecraft, dating to the age of Sun Tzu two millennia ago, puts the accent on winning without fighting. And this is true. And in fact, no sane leader or government in China or anywhere else relishes the dangers, hardships, and costs of warfare. Even conquerors love peace. It lets them get what they want without undue hazard. The trouble for Xi is that the Taiwan part of China's dream may not be attainable except through war. Persuasion is less and less an option for Beijing. The social and cultural bonds connecting the island with the mainland loosen by the day. Only about a tenth of Taiwanese now define themselves as Chinese, and there's little chance of that trend reversing itself. Sentiment favoring a cross-strait union is on the wane. Plus, Taiwanese watch what happens in places like Hong Kong, Xinjiang, and Tibet. They know a similar grim fate awaits them should they submit to mainland rule. So it's hard to imagine the Taiwanese people or their leaders yielding to what amounts to a demand for national self-destruction. Their goal of de facto independence is non-negotiable. So if China wants the island, it will have to take it by force. And in the end, that means mounting a cross-strait amphibious invasion. Otherwise, it will not possess the contested ground. The metal chain will remain intact athwart China's aspirations. So where does this leave us? In an uncomfortable position. China will not be cowed into forever forswearing control of Taiwan. It commands too much value for China, both in tangible military and economic terms, and as a focal point for China's sense of itself and its destiny. But China can be deterred day by day. Think about it. For Xi Jinping, as I've said, failing to act would be bad. Acting and losing in the Taiwan Strait would be far worse. He might lose his rule or even his life. That knowledge is our advantage. It's up to Taiwan and its friends to figure out how to implant doubt and dread in Xi's mind, making clear that we have both the capabilities to deny China what it wants and the resolve to use them. If Xi wakes up every morning and says to himself, this is not the day, then we will have deterred him for that day. We will postpone military action. If we can string together enough days like that, who knows? Good things may happen in the Far East. And that's probably about the best we can do under prevailing circumstances. This endeavor will be neither quick, nor easy, nor danger-free. Let's keep Xi and his comrades up nights, worrying that we will make their Chinese dream a nightmare. If we do, we may stay their hand. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. That was fantastic.